Hello and welcome back to the Northern Line. It's great to be back with you all again. In this episode, we have two brilliant interviews. The first is with Crean, and then we'll be joined by Dr. Chris Brower. Before we dive into the interviews, I'd like to remind everyone that Levelling the Field is back with us again on the 1st and 2nd of December. This is always a phenomenally excellent event and really well worth attending. It's also free, so do get yourself registered via the ALAN website ASAP. I'd also like to draw your attention to the North East Paediatric Anaesthesia Network meeting on the 8th of December. The programme covers a range of topics and it's a great opportunity for some useful CPD at any stage of training. Now, without any further ado, I'd like to hand over to Jess as she chats with the Crean team.
I'm going to be speaking to Crean now, who are our collaborative research in anaesthetics in the North East group, and talk a little bit about what they do and what they're involved in. So do you want to individually introduce yourselves?
Yes, so I'm Nikki. I'm currently a post-core anaesthetics trainee. So I finished core just under 12 months ago now, and I've been doing a perioperative medicine research fellowship at South Tees for the last kind of 11 months. And now I'm going to go and be a trust grade at Durham and try and get back into anaesthetics training or ITU training, depending on what comes first.
So I am Selena. I'm a ST4 anaesthetic trainee. So I am currently working at the RVI and work part-time, and I'm co-chairing the committee with Nikki.
So I'm Mary. I'm a CT2 in anaesthetics, and I'm Crane's secretary. So if you email the Crane email account, it's probably me that will reply to you.
So guys, tell me, what is Crane in a nutshell?
Crane is a group of non-consultant doctors in the Northeast. So it's for SAS, it's for trainees, and we're trying to just raise the kind of engagement and availability of research for everyone kind of who in non-consultant posts in the Northeast. So that's kind of through both running audit and QI programs and also through trying to establish research projects or getting people in the region involved in national projects as well, and just making people more aware of those that kind of things that are coming up. So get people into SNAP, there's Airways 3 coming, there's Poppy coming out the year after. And the more that we kind of talk about these projects and get trainees aware of them, hopefully trainees will find it easier to get involved and get some experience and things for their CV if they need to.
Okay, and what sort of experience would you be offering as part of that?
So it can be roughly as much as what people want or need, I guess. So if someone wants to come and do a bit of data collection or recruit a few patients to a study, that's fine. If someone comes and says, actually, I've got a great idea of a study that I want to run or a regional audit I want to run, and they want to be kind of the lead person and go through making a protocol and make sure it's registered and kind of be the, I guess, a kind of PI type figure, then they're also welcome to do that as well. It'll depend on what people's comfort is and what their experience levels are.
And with the national studies, would you be offering things like PI or associate PI jobs for that?
In terms of the associate PI scheme,
yeah.
It's a national scheme that's been recently introduced to try and get trainees more involved in research, but also get more acknowledgement, because it's very difficult to be PI unless you've got a permanent post somewhere. So the idea of associate PI is to try and be a sort of stepping stone and that gets people a bit more acknowledgement for their CVs, but also makes things a bit more accessible. So I think Nikki just mentioned Airways 3. So Airways 3 is a big project that the Research and Audit Federation of Trainees, so RAFT, is helping to run, which is looking at intubation versus LMA in cardiac arrest patients. And they're looking to run that at, I think, 3 sites in the Northeast. And at the moment, I think the plan is Carlisle, Sunderland and James Cook. And they're looking for associate PIs for that. So one of the things that we at Crane want to do is highlight opportunities like that and get people who are involved with Crane, known to Crane, to like be aware of those schemes so that they're in the best position to take advantage of them. Particularly because we are aware that, you know, obviously we're in a rotational program, mm-hmm. And it's important to start the ball rolling on these things before you actually rotate. Otherwise, there's not really enough time.
But quite often these associate PI roles are often sort of emailed out to the more senior trainees in a rotation. Is this a way to try and get more junior trainees involved or trainees at an earlier stage in training interested in research then?
So yes, any level of trainee. So I've just finished core training and I've done my associate PI scheme. Mary's in core and she's going to hopefully do the associate PI for Airways. They're available to anyone as long as you're in an anaesthetics post, whether right. that's in training or out of training.
Tell me about how did Crane come about? Why did we start Crane?
So I think previously there was Incarnet and James Durand was kind of the lasting member of that. Everyone who was kind of in the Incarnet committee either CCT'd or went off on maternity leave. And kind of James was left trying to run it, but also doing his PhD at the same time. So their kind of what they were managing to run had kind of dwindled down. Mm-hmm. I started working with James at South Tees doing a preoperative medicine fellowship and working with him on one of his studies and his PhD program. And we kind of talked about it and I'd mentioned how I kind of thought about getting involved in research, but didn't really know what to do or how to go about it. And asked a few people, but was found it really difficult to get anything until I started my current post. And basically me and James had a chat about how we would try and get the Northeast Trainee Research Network out and about and kind of get it back up again. So we talked about doing a rebrand, trying to find some people to get involved. And essentially it was an email by Barbara to see who would be interested in trying to reform a trainee research network. And James is here, is with us as well, helping out still. But obviously he has more on from his PhD side of things. So me, Selena and Mary, as well as some other guys are trying to hopefully get things back going again.
And I imagine it's a great way to boost the CV given the lack of registrar jobs recently.
I think that's part of my driving force was I came out of core training at the year the curriculum changed mm-hmm. and therefore didn't get a registrar post that year and then was immediately ineligible to get any other training post due to it changing from ST3 to ST4. So I knew that we had to kind of find a way to get people like myself and get their kind of portfolio scoring improved. Mm-hmm. And one of the big areas I found when I looked through mine was research. I had zero, absolutely yeah. nothing, at least audit or presentation. You can kind of get one or two, even if you've not done anything big. But I think research is really difficult because unless you know someone who can help guide you in a study, it's a completely foreign world, I think, to get involved in. So when I first started doing my job that I was just finishing, it was like, oh, should we make a research folder? And I'm like, what's a research folder? What needs to go in that? I don't really get all these new terms and things. So we're hopefully, by getting people involved in things like API and stuff, it helps both the portfolio and helps make that jump into doing some projects. And the API scheme, as well as involvement in research, can actually score you quite well in the curriculum. So it will help people who are looking for those extra 3-4 points to get through into getting an interview.
Alongside that as well, you know, if a trainee, you kind of have to have a completed audit cycle and get things re-audited to kind of maximise what you can do with things, whether it's presenting it or making those changes. So if a trainee does an audit project and then moves on from that hospital site, if they can highlight that through us, that a rotational trainee coming in the next rotation after could then pick that project up and re-audit it for the first trainee, then two people can then hopefully get an outcome from that by showing that they've kind of worked collaboratively on that project and enabled a full audit cycle or a full QI cycle. So hopefully it'll help with things like that as well.
So tell me a little bit about your ongoing projects.
So the first one that we had was essentially a QI project. We looked at Really simply, we'll be prescribing and administering regular paracetamol and ibuprofen to women post-caesarean section. And we looked at that in, I think we got 7 hospitals in the Northeast over a 1-week period. And we've just had the results of that, which were not shocking, but slightly disappointing in that I think our numbers were around 67% of patients actually received ibuprofen and paracetamol regularly. And then off the back of that, we're in the middle of designing our first proper research project. So kind of looking for a qualitative researcher to help us, writing a protocol, looking to submit to an ethics committee. And we're hoping to design some surveys to go out to patients, midwives and doctors to kind of explore some of the challenges and barriers to kind of regular administration of analgesia on our postnatal wards to hopefully see if we can think of some ideas to make it better. So that's the kind of obstetric one that's ongoing at the minute. And Mary could probably talk to you about the rapid sequence one that's just closing out because she's leading on that one.
Yeah, so we've just done a project auditing how people do rapid sequence inductions. And we have results from 12 hospitals across the Northeast. I think there's only one sort of major place that we don't have any results from. We have results from over a 2-week period. And basically we asked people to fill out a survey whenever they did an RSI, to sort of like look at what drugs people are using, whether they're giving the patient any opiates, whether they're bagging the patient, that kind of thing. Because sort of anecdotally, we felt that practice is quite varied and has probably undergone quite a lot of change since national guidance was last updated. So we've got results which are in line with what we expected, which show that most people are using propofol and rocuronium, and that's the sort of big change from the last thing we can really see in the literature, which is a big study from 2016. We're looking at potentially getting a presentation. There's a national conference in a few months that we are hoping to get a presentation up for that, but then actually we might also see if we can write it up and see if we can get it published.
And do you have any future projects apart from the ones you've mentioned that you want to speak about?
I think like that's part of why we're like excited to talk to you and also to try and get people on board, is that so there's only about 6 of us in the core team. But we're really keen to get other people on board. A lot of the times we come up with great ideas in our hospital locally, and this is a great opportunity to be able to run your audit or QI project, but on a regional level. And it's honestly been really easy to do because people are really excited to get involved and help, especially when you've done all of the like designed survey, the heavy lifting for them, and they just have to kind of advertise it at their site, get it registered, and then people run it and fill in the surveys for you. So it's a great opportunity for anybody who's got any ideas to come and join the team. And if they want to, like Nikki said earlier, if they want to lead on the project, then that's great. If they just have an idea but don't want to necessarily lead on the project but want to see how we do it, someone else can always lead on it, because there's a couple of us that have done it now and understand what it entails, or you can co-lead it and 2 of you can lead it together. We're like super flexible and like really enthusiastic, and we've learned loads, like absolutely loads, just on the kind of 2 projects that we've run so far. So open for ideas, I think, is one.
And what sort of recognition would the trainee get for participating in something like this?
So we've got a really clear authorship policy. Okay. So at the design of the project, we will decide who's leading the project, who's a key collaborator on the project. So that's somebody who is massively involved in the study and design of it. And then, so you can be one of those people, or you can just be a site lead and run it locally. Or you could just be a data collector, or you can elect to just look at the results or be part of the study. And you can carry out more than one of those roles. So if you have a significant role in writing up the study as well as designing and running it, and you're the lead on it, you'll be a named author. Otherwise, you will be kind of named in the appendix and listed as part of the Crane team. So as much or as little acknowledgement as you want, and it really does just reflect how much work you do on the project.
I think with that as well, to say that if you are kind of one of the key people and leading on it, you can then take that data that's collected and do with it kind of what you want to get out of it. So say if you've come up with a project idea and you say, actually, I was going to do it locally, but maybe I should do it regionally and get some more data. If you then get enough data that you can go, actually, I can present it at a national conference. If you were a person that came to the idea and led on it, then great, that's your data. You can put the abstract in. Recognize Crane in that, but you can then say, actually, we've led this project, and use that to kind of help you do what you wish to do with it. Likewise, if you kind of want to write it up or whatever, as long as it's appropriate recognition to everyone else involved, if you've come with us and played a massive part in doing your project, then definitely you'll get the recognition and be able to do with your data from the kind of the project idea that you've got what you wish to do with it.
Someone does want to get involved, how do they do that? Who do they contact? What do they do?
So we have the Crane email, which is crane@gmail.com. You can email there, and Mary is very good at checking and responding to those. We have the Crane Twitter, or we have the Crane website, which is again crane-ne.co.uk. And there's a contact us form on there, and that'll get through to myself as well.
Thank you. Plenty of useful information for everyone, so please don't hesitate to get in touch and get involved. There really are loads of opportunities out there, so please don't be shy. If there's something you're interested in, please do get in touch. I'm now going to hand over to Claire, who is chatting with Dr. Chris Browell.
Today, we have Dr. Chris Browell, consultant anaesthetist at the Royal Victoria Infirmary and founder of the Anaesthesia Learning in the Northeast organization, who will be telling us about what courses are in the offing. Welcome to the Northern Line, Chris. What prompted you to found, so to speak, the A-Line organization?
Well, so that's a good question, Claire. And sometimes I think about that and think, why did I bother? But so the story goes that in 2017, it was actually the Royal College came to Newcastle, came to the Northeast, and they said to the School of Anaesthesia at the time, there's a big problem with recruitment in your region. And there was a few other areas in the country that had the similar problem. Dundee, Yorkshire were examples of those. Where, and I know this sounds crazy now, actually, with the numbers, the competition ratios, but the Northern School of Anaesthesia couldn't recruit anybody to registrar jobs. And for about a decade, they'd been under-recruiting people, registrars, to those slots. So actually, if you looked back, we probably had an underfill rate of about 60%. And the result of that was, it was pretty evident around the region. The rotations were struggling. People were finding it difficult on rotas because there were so many gaps. I know that's nothing new at the moment, but when we were looking at how many people were being recruited, there was a 40% gap with people falling into those registrar jobs. Now, I totally appreciate that right at the moment, with everyone really struggling to get registrar jobs, that probably seems like a really lovely position to have been in. But at the time, it was a real headache and a real problem for workforce. And you can imagine departments were struggling to recruit consultants because there weren't enough people.
I remember that, actually.
Yeah. So when the college came to the region, they said, and I was a registrar at the time, and I was doing some stuff with the trainee committee, and they said, They asked the trainees to come and talk to the college and talk to the medical schools and talk to the trusts and talk to the school and talk to the deanery about what we felt the problems within our region were. So a few of us went away, and it wasn't just me. There was a core group of people who were completely focused on that. And Louise Sanderson, Lucy Powell, Ian Walker, to name a few, were really fundamental. And we went away and did some workshops and some focus groups, and we thought about all the issues. But what we actually did was we tried to come up with some solutions that we thought would make a difference in our region. And in the end, we ended up getting an opportunity to stand up in front of these relatively, big organizations in terms of those people I've mentioned, the college, the deanery, etc., and talk about where the problems we saw were and what the solutions might be for the future. And we came up with four things we thought would make a difference. And they ranged from, they ranged in their approach, but examples were things like run-through training, or optional years out of training with no implication. Just take some time out and come back to training whenever you want. Nobody's going to lose your nobody's going to give your job away, but it'll be there for you, a bit like GP have done. You know, improving the number of SSCs, for example, so more people got exposure to anaesthesia. And then there were two things that we thought were really important. And they were showing medical students and foundation doctors what anaesthesia is all about in intensive care, sort of demonstrating why we love it, to try and get more people enthused in anaesthesia. And that is what is now pipeline. So Laura Jones was very involved in that. So Freeman Consultant now, very involved in how we could really demonstrate and showcase our specialty. So that was pipeline. And then from that, the other thing we felt was really important was to look at the way we delivered education in our region and do it in a way that was beneficial to the region. And beneficial to the region, beneficial to the trainees, beneficial to our recruitment. We've all heard of Mersey and their courses, and they're fantastic. They're a resource that we've often used as a group of trainees to go to reap the rewards of that, hopefully be successful in our exams. And it helps Mersey stand in its own sort of own space in terms of education, because you know that place, you know that brand, you know that they are a great place for education for anaesthesia. But we knew that we had the same resource here. We had the same educators, the same quality educators, the same enthusiasm for education. But if we could reorganize ourselves in a way to deliver it in a slightly more cohesive, organized, you know, exceptional way, that would be beneficial for our region also.
So specifically, what courses does A-Line offer, and what stage of training or who are these courses geared for?
We have lots of courses, numerically about 40 to 45 courses that run through the year. Some of those repeat, so we run up to about 70 or 80 courses through the year. And that equates to nearly 150 to 200 days of courses that run a year. So there's loads of courses going on. And we cover all the way through from, if you like, medical students with pipeline, foundation doctors, all the way through your core training years, or stage one, stage two, stage three, and post CCT or CESA, with a certain number of sort of professional development type courses. And that we cover that for both anaesthesia, and I'll briefly touch on intensive care learning in the Northeast, because they also have the same structure. So we kind of split our courses up into different domains. So we have the pipeline courses, and that's kind of, pipeline is the lead into anaesthesia. It's vaguely anaesthetic related. It's got the word line in, which is great because it fits with the A-Line and I-Line branding, but it's all about getting people into anaesthesia. So that's medical students, foundation doctors. Once you are on the brink of choosing to do anaesthesia, then you can engage in some of our careers courses, which are there for interview preparation, application preparation, and that also applies to ST4 applications. Once you've got your role, then we've got new starters courses. So those, you know, loads of people know all about those, but new starters, it's your driving lessons for anaesthesia. So useful. I did them absolutely fundamental to, you know, that really steep learning curve early on in anaesthesia. And then we have a series of domains within A-Line that are there to support you through, if you like, core, intermediate, and higher, or stage one, stage two, stage three. So depending on where you are and your career pathway, depends on where those courses will fit in. As I mentioned before, there are careers courses to get you into SD4 on that journey, and there are also I-Line related courses to help you get into intensive care if that's your chosen course. And then there's other stuff going on as well. So particularly, we've got a big area of professional development, and that's one of our biggest areas. Those are courses that sit outside of sort of progression through your curriculum. And they're things that might help you progress into consultant jobs, might help you sort of develop your CV outside clinical work, like ethics, for example. Or it might help you develop your CV in a format that gives you the opportunity to present your work, develop your presentation skills, for example. And then finally, we've got a very important area of the FRCA examination, and those are split into both primary and final FRCA courses. And there's a series of courses for whatever stage you're at and whatever your next hurdle is.
So I've been on the website and I found it really useful the way that it is organized, so that you can simply choose from the homepage what stage you're looking for, and you can book into the course that would fit your learning needs. So is A-Line involved in any conferences?
Thanks for your positive feedback. It's always nice to hear. And our website is built and looked after by Tom Johnson, who is a trainee in the region. He's also deputy director of A-Line now, and he is an absolute wonder building the website. And what you see there is his work. It's absolutely fabulous. And it's made such a difference to people engaging with our courses, both in the region and outside the region. Yes, conferences, absolutely. One of the things that A-Line has been really aware of over the last couple of years is that now the Northeast, or now the Northern region, is absolutely, you know, the epicenter of anaesthesia education and anaesthesia training. You know, and I say that with a grin on my face, but the competition ratios have gone through the roof, and that's a result of lots of things. It's a result of COVID, it's a result of people's sort of career plans, career progression, new curriculum, etc. But ultimately, that perfect storm has resulted in a huge number of absolutely excellent trainees finding the transition between core training and specialty training really difficult. And, you know, if I was in that position now with the CV I had when I was a core trainee, I wouldn't even make it to interview.
It's much harder nowadays.
Yeah. Absolutely. The goalposts have shifted, and that's really difficult. And we as an organization, me personally, we feel for that group of trainees. So as a result of that, we've been working to consider how A-Line can support our regional trainees and national trainees in their endeavors to progress through training. And as a result of that, there's been a series of conferences which we've set up. The first of those was run by and organized by and really pioneered by Nabil Siddiqui, who organized the Northeast Obstetric Anesthesia Meeting, NEOAM. That's been hugely successful. And these are, yes, not ideal, but they're online virtual conferences where we have a series of presenters, experts in the field, keynote speakers, as well as a whole series of abstracts and oral presentations delivered by trainees on case reports, on research, and on audit or quality improvement projects, giving the attendees the opportunity for some, you know, valuable CPD, but also giving trainees both in the region and outside the region the opportunity to present an oral presentation at a conference. And because of the audience we managed to draw, they're most often national conferences. What we have been able to do following the success of NEOAM is set up a series of other virtual conferences in a similar manner. So we've also seen NEAIR, so the Northeast Anaesthetic and Intensive Care Review, which is due to happen this coming year in February. And also we've had the Northern Transfer meeting as well. So that's looking a little bit more at the intensive care side and transfer medicine side. So we've had already, we've had four national conferences and that is going to continue. We're going to see another NEOAM, and we're going to see another Northeast Air certainly within the next 6 months. So it's fantastic. It's great opportunities to present. It's great opportunities to get involved in organizing, and it's great opportunities for those trainees to, you know, get some CPD, but also develop their CVs, their professional, you know, portfolios.
There's also been a conference that has drawn international acclaim, I believe, Leveling the Field.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. So I'm smiling while you're talking. So Leveling the Field is an absolutely, you know, it's an international success. I cannot praise the team who have set up Leveling the Field and delivered Leveling the Field enough. Samir Ahmed is absolutely, you know, he is driving the tanker, and this is a tanker. It's colossal. It crosses the NHS, it crosses barriers, you know, specialty barriers, and it has an effect and an impact on people throughout the NHS, and challenges some of the mantras that we've been living by, we've been working by, we've been letting our systems develop. And it's been so popular. We're talking thousands and thousands and thousands of delegates, impacts, changes. For example, one of the big outcomes from Leveling the Field last year is that we now have international medical graduates induction program integrated, starting to be integrated around the around the region, around the country. We've got pilot schemes. You know, this conference isn't just a conference people are going on to listen and consider diversity or equality. It's a conference that is resulting in change, and there's, you know, players from all around the NHS, chief executive of NHS England, for example, just to name one, attending these conferences and having open discussions that we can all go and listen to. So I cannot praise it enough. It's absolutely been a breakthrough conference for us. It's our biggest draw of candidates and delegates that we see, and the team who work on that put in a huge amount of effort to make it successful, and the success it is. The conference for this year is going ahead in December. I cannot wait. That's going to be all about differential attainment. It's going to be a two-day conference, and there's going to be a whole focus on looking at how we can balance and level the field in differential attainment exams, etc., which I know the Royal College of Anaesthetists are particularly interested in.
I kind of see the success that A-Line has had in reversing the trend of recruitment toward the Northeast. I see that success potentially being repeated with Leveling the Field, in that hopefully there'll be more recruitment, both nationally and internationally, of doctors to the UK. I know that A-Line organizes awards that it gives to the number of trainees and consultants that contribute in teaching in its courses. So what awards do you give, and how are they achieved? How can they be achieved?
So yes, A-Line do. And we know as an organization that a huge part of delivering our educational content, delivering our courses, relies on high quality, motivated, enthusiastic faculty. Without those faculty, A-Line doesn't exist. And much of the education we receive as we develop through training doesn't exist. It's part of our responsibility as clinicians, as professionals, to educate. And we are there as an organization to support those educators. But we know it comes with time, and it comes with effort. And it's really important to us that we recognize that effort. So the A-Line Educator Award scheme is set up and designed to do that. It's there to recognize the time and effort faculty, trainees, consultants put in a way that we hope is more beneficial to you in your CV or your, you know, professional portfolio, etc. So what do I mean by that? Well, you know, let's say you, Claire, right? You're coming up to your consultant application and you're thinking, how am I going to evidence what I have done as an educator in my training so that the place I want to go and work can see that, you know, I'm a really enthusiastic educator. Well, you could write a list of all the things you've done. I did, you know, I was a faculty at the National Final SOE course. I was faculty on the primary XYZ. I did this, that, and the other. And create a great big list of all the things you did where you delivered a lecture, you spent some of your time absolutely valuably. But looking at that from a department's perspective, it's sometimes difficult to assimilate what that means, the amount of time you've put in, and it's quite difficult to describe in a succinct way. The Educator Award is about delineating those efforts in a way that can be a bit more valuable to you to demonstrate certain things. And so we've done that simply by delineating bronze, silver, and gold. And a bronze award might be an award that you achieve by gathering points. And I'll talk in a moment just about how you gather those points. But you might gather those points all the way through your training, from the beginning of core training all the way through to the end of training and as a consultant. And cumulatively collecting them. And if you get to the point of a bronze award, then that would demonstrate to me that you've committed a large amount of time to education through your training. And I would expect a trainee who has been enthusiastic and contributed to education through their training could achieve a bronze award by the end of that training. At the very top, we have the gold award. Now, the gold award is there for the trainee, the person who commits a huge amount of effort and time to education. They might have run a course multiple times. They might have absolutely committed and invested in delivering the education consistently throughout training. We don't give many gold awards out. There's been one so far. There are probably more coming, but for somebody, if I'm sitting on a, you know, an interviewing panel for a consultant, or if I'm reviewing someone's CV at any stage and I see that they've got an A-line Educator Award, a gold award, a silver award, or a bronze award, it means a lot to me, and it's starting to creep in CVs I've seen to demonstrate real, you know, real contribution to education in a way that you can define quite clearly. And the points, how do you gather points? You gather points by contributing, by writing lecture material, delivering course material at courses, being faculty at a course, spending some time, writing some mock questions. And these are for people who are contributing to courses, not necessarily the lead organizer for a course. They're for the contributors. And then finally, we do have one further award, which is the Harlequin Award, which, if you like, is like a lifetime achievement award in education. So if you've spent years contributing to courses, developing, pushing, innovating, thinking in a way that we feel is outstanding, you know, lifetime achievement, that would be the sort of thing that would receive the Harlequin Award. So we have given the Harlequin Award out 3 times so far. So our first recipient was Fiona Pearson, Nicola Hersher, and also David Main as well, have all received the Harlequin Award, all of which I'm sure people recognize those names. Absolutely, you know, stalwarts of education, and continue to be that. So, you know, well done to those people. There's more to come. And if you're a trainee thinking, yeah, actually, I've done a fair bit of education and teaching, why don't you have a look on the website, click on the educator area, tot up your points, and see when the next application window is.
So lastly, plans for the future for A-Line, Chris. You've come a long way, certainly. You've reversed the trend, in fact, about that you were trying to address. You've increased recruitment to the Northeast to an extent that now it's very competitive. So what are the plans for continuing to improve education in anesthesia training?
I think the future for the Northeast is really positive. Yes, the competition ratios have changed, and I'd love to take responsibility for that, although maybe everyone would hate me for that. I think it is just a trend that has come because of circumstances and that perfect storm. It will settle down. The future, there's a lot of stuff on the go within A-Line, and everyone knows Barbara Sladen's name, and every day when I speak to Barbara, I know things are getting busier and busier, and there's more and more exciting stuff happening because she looks more and more stressed with me. But Barbara is absolutely the centre of everything A-line related. She thinks, breathes it, lives it. So I can't thank her enough for everything. But yes, the future is really exciting. So what's going on? Well, the first thing is, we'd like to help people, both from an educational perspective, to learn, but also if anyone's sitting out there and thinking, you know what, I do have some gaps on my CV, there's some areas I would like to improve on from a management and leadership point of view, and I've got an interest in education, or I've got an idea, then please find me, email me, come along on one of the A-line open evenings, and let's discuss it, because we're here to provide a platform to make things easier, to make things better, to help with your admin burdens, all of those things, share ideas. If we can help you, then we would like to. This is about helping the trainees as much as it's about delivering good education. There's some really exciting projects going on at the moment to improve the progression into anesthesia as a new starter. So looking to run parallel with the new starters course, there's a piece of work looking at helping trainees build up their basic science understanding, their physics understanding, for example, in that beginning year of training. So accelerating into anesthesia is going to be a piece of work ran and led by the trainees to really make that first year of training a little bit more streamlined with some peer-to-peer learning. And there'll be more information coming on that. There's also a really nice piece of work coming on ultrasound-guided IV access. Again, run and designed by one of the trainees, but looking to offer an A-line delivered IV ultrasound access course in every hospital with an MDT feel to hopefully address the constant cannula calls you receive, but also giving absolutely great opportunities for MDT practical teaching at your base site as you rotate round. There's going to be a big two-day faculty progression and development day in the summer of next year for anyone who does anything for A-line. We will be doing a two-day workshop, essentially developing a whole series of skills with presentation, feedback, simulation, as well as discussions around each of our course areas and each of our domains to see how we can improve things for the future. And so if you're faculty, look out for the information on that. And if you want to get into the faculty before then let me know. So there's absolutely loads going on. You know, it's in my brain from 8 a.m. till 10 p.m. But we're always looking for, you know, new people, new enthusiasm, and to help people if we can, if that, you know, suits you. So please get in touch. That is a summary, and keep an eye out for what's changing.
Thank you very much, Chris, for that run through of what A-line brings to training in anesthesia in the Northeast.
Thank you both. It's absolutely incredible what's been achieved by A-line and I-line over the last few years, and it's fantastic how it keeps growing from strength to strength. As with Crane, please do get in touch if you want to get involved or to find out more. Thanks to all our guests. That's all we have time for in this episode. Thanks so much for listening. We've been the Northern Line, and we'll be back with you again soon. Thank you.